data has gravity.
Steve McDowell is Senior Analyst at More Insights and Strategy. This is Tech Barometer Cloud Coverage. I'm Jason Lopez. When data doesn't live close to the workloads that consume it, it starts running into issues. Let's say you're editing a podcast. You need your source audio and video to be in sync. And that's kind of an illustration of what it's like with workloads, especially when they're in different geographies. That latency could be a problem. It could hurt responsiveness and performance.
To respond to that, we see the cloud guys stepping up. Amazon introduced something called local zones exactly because of this problem. And it went to LA first for a reason, because that's where the media and entertainment industry is. And they're probably the ones that are most sensitive to latency like this. But you also see this with applications, right? If I'm running a big retail database and I'm doing price lookups from a barcode scanner, right, that round trip to that database, right, needs to be performant. And if I got a little overzealous 3 years ago and said, I'm going to move everything to Amazon's cloud, right, maybe I'm experiencing some issues that are rebounding. And we see a lot of that. We see a whole lot of that. And that's one of the drivers behind this whole explosion of as a service on-prem, right? So you go HP, GreenLake, Dell on-prem cloud stuff. I can get the cloud economic model and flexibility without, you know, all of the downsides of having my workloads and my data somewhere else. And Amazon is coming in with Outposts. So you see all of this activity around trying to bridge that gap. But to circle back to your question, right, cloud native gives me the flexibility to move those applications around, right? Because it encapsulates my workload in a way where I don't have to go manage a server and install all the dependencies and all of this stuff to move it, right? So now I have this flexibility to put it where it makes the most sense.
And you said you had another answer to that question too. There was a second one.
The other answer is, you know, we're seeing containers used as application delivery mechanisms. And, you know, an example of that, right? I run a small database here in my house. I don't want to go manage a Postgres database, right? But my NAS box has the ability to pull down a Postgres container. I don't do anything. I just push a button and it's here, right? So it becomes an application delivery mechanism as well. So we're kind of seeing both things.
Well, I wonder if you could talk to that idea of being able to just switch on the fly, being able to have that optionality, you know, where you have to have your application and where you have to have the data.
Yeah. And again, I mean, a lot of this container stuff grew out of the DevOps world where it was exactly that, right? You know, I'm an application developer. I'm running a coding shop. You know, when I check in code into the source code control system, there's a trigger and it says, go start a container and run all the test suites against it and then tear that container down. That's why we invented containers, right? They're very ephemeral, very temporary in nature. They were designed for that. Now we're in the process of adapting those to more stateful and enterprise kind of workloads. But you're exactly right. And if you look at things like Kubernetes, there's a lot in there around rule-based management. IT guys want this as well. It may not be I'm going to move a workload from Amazon's cloud to my on-prem, but it may be that, you know, the server is getting a little overloaded. I'm watching all these metrics. Let's trigger some rules, right? I mean, we've been marching toward the autonomous data center for a long time. And containers, man, what a great enabler to move that to the next level.
So what about the idea of the high-tech aspect of some of this stuff in cloud native, you know, technology for the sake of technology?
It's funny you ask that because, you know, for all the benefits we've talked about, it's still a relatively immature set of technologies. We talked recently to a CIO at a casino in Las Vegas. And he said they actually keep a metric internally, the turnover rate of those under 30 versus those over 30, because the young IT guys come in and everybody wants to play with the toys. I mean, this is not a new phenomenon, but these are some powerful toys we have now. I'm not going to change the architecture of my casino because another architecture might be more efficient, right? Oftentimes, yeah, there's a reason that we have so much COBOL code still working, right? If it's not broke, why risk breaking it by moving it to something that may benefit the IT guy? Because at the end of the day, it's not about the IT guy. It's about the business. The IT guy is selling data services back to his business. So yeah, CIO wants to be more efficient. But Joe business owner, man, you better not lose a transaction or give him downtime. But no, it is very generational. It's very generational. I talked to another, I'm actually writing a paper right now for one of the big OEMs. And their take on this is your business is too critical to chase after the cool toys. it's going to frustrate the younger guys, but at the same time, those are the guys that are going to go to smaller companies and prove out this technology, and then it will become enterprise. So early days for cloud native. In 5 years, it's going to be baked into everything. And that's going to be the younger generation pushing us to it, for sure, for sure.
Well, it seems like they're, you know, they're building their careers, and in some ways they want to chase this new hot thing. They need to know it, but it sounds like they also need to be grounded in, you know, some of the fundamentals.
Yeah, 25 years ago when I started my career, I came in with all sorts of hot ideas. I grew up in the era of the mini computer, but I was a Unix guy, and I came in, I'm like, Unix is the way. Today, it's all Unix, but that took a long time. And I think the same thing is going to happen. These are the toys they have to play with. These are the ones they're learning on. And as they have the opportunity to use them, they will, and they'll prove it. One of the challenges with cloud that IT folks are facing is not a technology challenge, it's a cultural one. We make it so easy as an industry now to spin up an instance. You have all of this shadow IT happening within organizations. It's nothing to take my corporate card and create an Amazon account. Actually, if I just go create an Amazon account, I get, you know, a fair amount of resources for free for a year. And people are putting corporate stuff because they can spin up a virtual machine because IT is too restrictive or taking too much time. You see the young guys doing that. You see business people that are tech savvy doing that. And that's really, I think, pushing IT very, very hard to go look at some of these technologies.
Right. Well, on another tack, what's up with the hybrid cloud? We hear that the hybrid cloud isn't really a hybrid cloud. It's not really here. It's a multi-cloud. I wonder if you could help us sort this out, Steve.
Yeah, and I think this whole area is deeply intertwined with the cloud native technologies we've been talking about. We live in a hybrid multi-cloud world. There's no question. I don't know that we're seeing a lot of IT shops deploying architectures that are spanning cloud vendors necessarily. I mean, some of that happens, but that's not a model that we see. When we talk about hybrid multi-cloud, what we're really talking about is a range of experiences, kind of a scalability of experience from on-prem through maybe on-prem as a service or a managed service, like an HPE GreenLake or an Amazon Outpost, all the way up through the public cloud. Cloud native gives us the tools we need to migrate workloads between those fairly seamlessly. I don't know that I see a lot of inter-cloud from like Amazon to Azure, for example. But I do see a lot, and we are seeing increasing levels of, you know, it's a continuum from on-prem through private cloud. You know, I'll define private cloud as it could be like an IBM private cloud or an Oracle private cloud, or it could be HPE GreenLake managed experience, which looks a lot like cloud, then all the way up to the public cloud providers.
So if you have a private cloud, let's say, you know, on-prem, why would you be using Amazon, Azure, Google?
I don't know that I am using all three of those, but each of those are going to have a different benefit to me, right? If I am using multiple clouds, it's going to be for a specific reason, right? Maybe Google has some geographic coverage that Amazon doesn't, and I want to deploy an instance in this part of Malaysia. But by and large, I'm using public cloud for, again, the elasticity, right? The flexibility of experience. If I have a workload that, you know, is going to change over size, change over time, or I have a cluster of workloads that are, you know, maybe short term, or I don't want to spend the CapEx required to go build out a rack of servers, and I can go lease them from Amazon, right? Paying my, you know, $69 a month for my EC2 instance. It gives me that flexibility. The things I'm running on-prem are going to be the things that, again, either for regulatory reasons I don't want to put in the public cloud, or it's existing legacy stuff I don't want to touch, or it needs the kind of performance that I'm only going to get on-prem, or it's tied to a data warehouse that is just too expensive to move off-prem because, you know, your biggest cloud costs are not compute. It's about moving data back and forth. Amazon making all their money on egress charges. You know, the why is it's about a flexible software-driven architecture that cloud enables, which I'm going to get from an Amazon or an Azure, and blending that with kind of the performance I'm going to get with on-prem. And I'll put private cloud with the on-prem stuff, right? So when I talk about on-prem, often I'm talking about, you know, your traditional kind of server VM architecture. When I talk about private cloud, I start to get the cloud experience kind of push-button infrastructure that the public guys give me, but deployed with on-prem services. And then from an economic perspective, it's really where the as-a-service guys come into play. I get the cloud economics without the CapEx, right? And it looks like a data center.
Well, in all of this, we see a lot of competition between, you know, especially the top service providers, you know, the cloud service providers. How is that competition between them benefiting all businesses that want to use those services? What do people have to be careful of?
So public cloud has removed IT and compute as a barrier to entry to anything. There was a time when you were a startup, you're raising $20 million because you need to buy $10 million worth of servers. Those days are gone. I'm getting, it's not quite rent to own, but I'm just paying for what I need and when I need it. So, you know, I can fire an experiment up that requires a, you know, $5,000 server, but I'm only spending $89 because I'm going to run it for a month. So it's removed IT as an obstacle for deployment. And that scales up to enterprise IT, right? If I want to go do some machine learning, right, I can go spend $50,000 to build a big giant GPU equipped server, or I can go to Amazon and rent one for the weekend, right, and run my model. It's all about push button deployment, flexibility of service. Now, the gotchas is, how do I manage that with the rest of all of my IT resources? And it all comes back to the management plane. I want on my screen my software-defined data center, and I want to be able to push a button and control whatever. And the more kind of infrastructures, if you will, that I have to support under that umbrella, the harder that becomes, right? Right now, I've got my AWS console. I've got my on-prem console. I got my Nutanix private cloud console. What I really want is Steve's IT shop console. That's the challenge, and that's the struggle, and that's where there's a couple of players that are trying to solve that in a big way, but it's not quite there.
Steve McDowell is Senior Analyst at More Insights and Strategy, covering data and storage. This is Tech Barometer Cloud Coverage. I'm Jason Lopez. Tech Barometer is produced by The Forecast, and you can find us at TheForecastByNutanix.com.